Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to another exciting edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Pod Vader, and we present you with the NFC East division preview. If you've missed any of our division previews, we've been doing them all through the month of June. You're going to want to subscribe to our iTunes account. Just go to iTunes, search for Next Fan Up, and subscribe. It's that easy. We're available basically anywhere where great podcasts are heard. Our entire archive is available at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. So you're going to want to check out our podcast there. We still have three more divisions to present to you, and all the previous divisions are available at our archives, either on iTunes, at Blog Talk Radio, or anywhere else great podcasts are heard. So, we are by the fan for the fan, and we know that you're going to disagree with some of the things that we are presenting here, including fans of the same team. They're going to have disagreements. Send us your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. It's the best way to get in touch with us and the best way for you to express your opinions about the opinions we are sharing about your favorite teams. nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at NFU Podcast is the official Twitter account of the Next Fan Up Podcast, and you're going to want to check out our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/NFU podcast, or if you just type Next Fan Up in the search bar, that's the easiest way to find the show. And we're going to have lots of things posted there for you during the season. We'll have a write-up from each fan previewing the upcoming matchup each and every week. Right now, we have our top 10 players of all time for every team. So you're going to want to check that out and disagree. I know there's going to be guys that are on your team that didn't get put on the all-time greatest list. We want to know who those players are. So facebook.com/NFU podcast. The NFC East. I've got quite a few thoughts on this particular division. I will share my thoughts about the upcoming season with you after the fans of the NFC East.
All right, and here we go, lining up another division preview for you, our fans. Just a reminder, we are the Next Fan Up Podcast, the podcast by the fans and for the fans, and we are delivering on that promise this time. We are looking at the NFC East, and we have a super fan representative from every NFC East team here. We're going to be breaking down the division from the eyes of the people that are really paying attention to this stuff far more closely than the national commentators. And I'm really excited to get into breaking down the all-division team that these guys have come up with and getting through a preview of each individual team. By the way, I am your host for this particular segment, but I am the Kansas City Chiefs superfan. We're not going to be talking about my team, but you're going to be hearing about us and our division here in a bit. But first and most importantly, let's get to these superfans individually. We are joined by our New York Giants superfan, Sam. How's it going, Sam?
It's going good. Introducing me first, just like the Giants are going to finish this year in the NFC East. I like it.
Yeah. First in off-season payroll commitments, perhaps. Yes.
We've got to spend money to make money.
Well, speaking to people that want to spend money to hopefully make some money, we are also joined by our Eagles superfan, James. What's up, James?
Not much. You know, looking forward to another second-place finish.
All right. We're setting this up pretty well. We're all aligning ourselves. I don't know if it is then fair for me to then introduce... who do I do? Do I do Washington or Dallas next? I'm going to go ahead and introduce our Dallas superfan, Bryant, next. How does it feel to be third place, Brian?
Third place in introductions, but way last place when it comes to spending money in the offseason, and that's not a position I'm very used to. So we're shaking things up this year.
And weirdly enough, fourth place in the introductions is first place in last year's standings. It is our across-the-pond Scottish Washington superfan, Neil. How's it going, Neil?
Hey, Nick. It's going well. Thank you very much for hosting this, Nick. And also, as a little prize for you, you get to speak about real football for a change and not something that's happening over in the AFC.
Oh, right. Well, because, you know, it was totally the NFC team that dominated that Super Bowl this last time around. That was totally what happened.
That's cruel. Yeah.
Yeah, he totally should have dove in on that ball. But anyways, we're going to move on to this division more specifically. And the first thing I want to get to with you guys is the all-division team. One of the cool things that we've been able to do, given that we have these representatives from every team, is we've forced all of our fans representing each team in the divisions to argue amongst themselves and come up with sort of a Pro Bowl team for the division, but it's just for the division. And I'm sure you guys argued a lot on this, but let's get into it. Just looking at the offense first here, you have as your all-division QB Tony Romo, although you note in parentheses that Eli was close. As your all-division running back, you have the rookie Ezekiel Elliott, followed and as your three wide receivers, you have ODB, Dez, and DeSean Jackson. Your tight ends are Reed and Witten. Your offensive tackles are Williams and Smith. At the guard spots, you got Sheriff and Martin. Your center is Frederick. So, it seems like it was a pretty close vote when it came to the best QB in this division. So let's start there. Romo, with his glass shoulder, was the guy you put ahead of everybody else. Brian, how confident are you that Romo is actually going to play a full season here, or at least close to a full season?
I mean, you want to be confident, but you can't be. I mean, when he's on the field, there's no doubt in my mind. Tony Romo is the best quarterback in this division, and I don't really think it is all that close. But like you said, it all comes down to availability. And I think 16 games is out of the question. Like, that expectation is just off the table. But if we can get 12, 13 games out of Tony Romo this year, that's really all we need. And again, like I said, I don't think when healthy, I don't think it's all that close. I think it's Romo and everybody else. But factoring in that health, I get why Eli is in the conversation. To me, he's a top 6-7 quarterback when healthy in the NFL. But there's always going to be those injury concerns. I think this really wasn't a debate to me.
So, Sam, do you think 12 to 13 games of Romo is better than 16 games of Eli?
I don't. And honestly, it's 12 or 13 games at this point may also be a pipe dream. He's faced the same injury a couple of times. It's not an injury you really want to see in your quarterbacks. And he's been playing in a great offense with a great offensive line. He's been as protected as possible, and he's still getting injured. So can you really say somebody who their own super fan is saying that they're hoping for 13 games is really the quarterback for the all-division team? I just think you can't be. If it's not realistic to play 16 games, then you're probably not the quarterback I want. I'd rather take Eli for 16. And, he hasn't missed a game. He's won 2 Super Bowls. When Eli's on, he's an incredible quarterback. And if we're putting him behind an all-pro offensive line that the division would have, I think that difference between Eli and Tony is a little reduced. But, at his best at this point, Tony Romo is the best quarterback. I just don't think that he's healthy enough at this point.
Well, and this is actually a situation where every team has a somewhat interesting quarterback situation, because obviously you have the disagreement about who is the top guy, but also we have Kirk, you like that Cousins, who just got himself a pretty nice payday on this offseason, and there seems to be widely varying opinions about how good of a QB and a master of the offense he is. Neil, you care to speak up for your guy? I mean, do you think he, when the dust settles at the end of this year, that he's going to be, forcing his way into this discussion as the best QB in the division?
Yes. This is a massive year for Kirk Cousins. I think we'd all agree that potentially, if he has a season similar to last year or better, then he's certainly in the conversation with Romo and Manning to be the best quarterback in this division. I'm a fan of Cousins, and I like a lot of what he's doing in the off-season. There's been a lot of talk of him speaking to other quarterbacks, getting information, getting advice. I like that. I like that when he speaks well, down-to-earth guy. I'm very pleased with him as a quarterback, but not yet in the class of Rome. I think he's closer to Eli. I think Brian got up some great stats about Tony Romo's fourth quarter play. I think he's sort of the way he can drag the team back and win games in the fourth quarter. And that's probably what swung it for me in terms of having him as number one in the division. But at the end of this season, Kirk Cousins, fingers crossed, toes crossed, everything crossed, will be close to the number one quarterback in this division.
Well, and James, just because your QB situation is so interesting, and granted, we could talk a bit more about this when we start looking at all of the teams individually, but I'm just interested in your thoughts of just who your QB is right now. I mean, you have three guys that the team has invested pretty heavily in each of them. How much playing time do you think each of them is going to get?
Well, before we made the trade for Carson Wentz, I was really expecting Chase Daniel to beat out Sam Bradford for the starting job in the season. At this point, I'm still hoping that happens, but regardless of who starts, depending on our record by week 10 or 11, they're going to get benched for Carson Wentz. That's just the way I see it playing out. Doug Peterson was in a similar situation when Andy Reid was hired as head coach, when he basically held the job for Donovan McNabb. I see a very similar situation taking place with Carson Wentz. So it doesn't matter who starts the season. Somewhere towards the end, the middle, the end of the season, somewhere like that 8 to 12 week range, it's going to be Carson Wentz's team. They're going to hand the reins over to him. Hopefully by then he'll have a grasp of the system, see enough of how things should happen on the field. There won't be a lot of three and outs, so we'll have a running game to lean on hopefully this season. But I don't expect much from Bradford. This is, in fact, when we announced that we were trading a quarterback to Denver, I was praying it was Sam Bradford. Unfortunately, we sent the wrong quarterback to Denver. And, you know, not that I want Sanchez, but at least Sanchez being here would give me complete confidence that the rookie would be starting. But, you know, we've got a quarterback who doesn't want to compete against the rookie, giving him the starting job. And he basically, you know, you look at his stats, every touchdown he's thrown is basically worth $1 million based on what he's earned in the league. So,
interesting stuff. Well, I look forward to getting deeper into your team. But another position that I found really interesting in terms of your all-division team for the offense was the wide receivers, just because you guys sort of, you know, copped out and didn't give rankings for your wide receiver 1, 2, and 3. You just have Beckham, Dez, Jackson here. How would you guys rank them? I mean, are these guys ranked in the order that you think they are, and is that what you guys all think? I mean, Brian, do you think, you know, ODB is a better receiver than Dez right now?
This time last year, I never would have agreed with that statement. But after a year of Dez being hurt and ODB repeating, if not exceeding, his rookie year, I do have to cop the fact that Beckham is the best receiver in the NFC East right now. With foot injuries, I'm always concerned with how Dez is going to come back. I mean, all the reports are good, but of course that's what he's going to say and that's what the team's going to say. And I was really interested going into year two to see how teams would scheme up ODB, and he continued to just tear defenses apart. And now you add the help he's going to have in Sterling Shepard and a returning Victor Cruz. It's only going to strengthen his position, and I think it's a slam dunk that Beckham is the number one in the receiver in the division right now. But we could be revisiting that discussion just as easily this time next year, if Dez can get back to being Dez.
Any dissenting opinions there?
No, I mean, no. Just to add, I think Odell Beckham, you know, he's been injured. I mean, he's not been injured, but he's had injuries that haven't allowed him to have a full training camp and a full offseason. And even during the year, limited him in workouts. And this year, all signs are pointing to be fully healthy. He does have that help that Brian brought up. And I just think we're about to see Odell Beckham take it to an even higher level, and I think this time next year we're talking about him being the best receiver in the league.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. It is scary that this is only his third season coming up. And health reasons are pretty much the only reason I wouldn't rate Dez over Beckham right now. Other than that, at times I would question Jackson being the number one receiver on his own team, let alone the third best receiver in the division. But considering what, you know, what else there is amongst our four teams at wide receiver, he is the best choice for the third wide receiver in this division.
Jackson might not be giving us the numbers over the last couple of seasons, but when he's in the Washington offense, Kirk Cousins and the rest of the offense improves by 10 to 15, 20% maybe. He's a real difference maker, even if he's not catching the ball. He can still run deep and is still as quick as anybody on the field. That's why I think he ended up there as the number three receiver, just for his pure big play ability.
As long as he crosses the goal line when he's supposed to.
All right, well, let's take a look at your defensive side of this all-division team. And at your defensive lines... go ahead.
I think just on behalf of the NFC East, I think we don't have the greatest team here compared to some of the other divisions, but I think that it's worth pointing out we do have the best offensive line of any division in football. That offensive line is just incredible.
And on behalf of the Dallas Cowboys, I'd like to say you're welcome, because we all know where the majority of that's coming from.
Absolutely. It's fantastic. It really is. Can't take that away from Dallas.
It's pretty good. All right. Since you, Neil, are a big fan of the big fat dudes, let's move on to the defensive line here that you have. You have, as your, and you set this up as a 3-4 defense, you have Baker, Harrison, and the $100-something million man, Fletcher Cox. And behind them, at your outside linebacker spots, you have Gillette and Vernon. And then at inside linebacker, you have Sean Lee and Hendricks. At safety, you have Church and Jenkins. And at the cornerback spots, you have Norman and DRC. So let's, you know, just because it's just happened, I want to move to you, James, real quick, and just get your reaction to the Fletcher Cox extension. You know, is this amount of money wise? I mean, your team has been really busy both of these last two off seasons, and this is a huge contract. I'm just interested to get your thoughts on it and what you think of the player.
I think he's one of the best in the league right now, his position at D-line. I was expecting him to get an extension, a nice lengthy one. I was not expecting this number. $100 million is definitely nothing to sneeze at. The Eagles obviously think very, very highly of him as probably one of the top two or three at his position in the league, if not one of the top two or three defenders in the league. I mean, this is J.J. Watt money, basically. And it did blow me away when he got that contract. I thought that maybe he would get a 5-6 year deal, which, you know, he did get the 6 year deal, but the numbers, I was expecting something more on the lines between 85-92, but, you know, 100+ is, you know, I'm happy for him. I'm happy we have him locked up for the next 6 years. He is pretty much the interior anchor of an offensive line. His play alone actually won us 2 games last season against the Saints and kept us in the game against the Cowboys the first time around, that low-scoring debacle, if you want to call that a game. But his play is phenomenal on the field.
If you take J.J. Watt out of the equation, I think Cox is up there in that next group of players, right up there. I mean, he's a superb player. One of the things I think will help the Eagles down the line, and giving them so much money now, is that they're going to, if all things pan out with Carson Wentz, then they're going to have 3 or 4 years of a very low salary cap number going to the quarterback position, so they can afford deals like this with Cox. I like the deal. I think it's terrific. What a player.
Yeah, you can easily make the argument that Fletcher Cox is the best defensive player in the division, and this contract only justifies that. I think it's completely warranted, and he'll finally start getting the recognition nationally that he deserves, because like you guys said, I mean, you know, he's right up there behind J.J. Watt in terms of D-line guys, and not a lot of people know the name, and it's a shame because, like you said, he wreaks havoc inside. He has been a thorn in our sides for a couple seasons now, so it's good to see him get rewarded. I'm always a little shaky on these $100 million defensive contracts, but that's the going rate nowadays, so I was glad to see he got what he really did deserve.
Well, and I want to get to our individual previews here quickly, but I just felt like I had to point out, you know, that two of the guys in your all division back eight are also newcomers in Josh Norman and Olivier Vernon. And so, and I'm interested in what you guys think in terms of who is going to make the biggest impact. They both got really big contracts, but Sam, tossing it to you here, do you think Vernon or Norman makes the biggest impact in year one with their new team?
Oh, God, I really hope it's Vernon. but I do think it's Norman. I mean, Norman does have, you know, he has Des Bryant in Dallas. He has Odell in New York. He has Deshaun Jackson. He has Deshaun Jackson in practice, but he has he has Jordan Matthews on the Eagles. You know, there is somebody clear that he matches up with on every team. I think he is really good. He's going to have some good games. I think overall he's the guy that we're going to end the season thinking he had more impact. Although if Olivier Vernon, you know, is that pass rusher, then, you know, maybe him. But I do think it's Norman.
And you, Neil, what do you think? Do you agree?
I do agree. I'm not a huge fan of Vernon. I'll be very interested to see how he performs in that Giants defense. I think with Josh Norman, for once, and it's been a long time coming, Washington make a big free agency splash and find someone who actually fits into the system they play. And I think that's a key thing for Washington, because in the past we've just made a total mess of it.
I just hope this is Albert Hainsworth 2.0.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Oh, that's bad. Anything but that.
Oh, yeah. That hurts. But moving on to the previews, I want to do these in the order that the teams finished last year. And I think for about any division in the league, though, that particular order makes the least amount of sense, because these teams were very muddled all throughout 2015. It seemed like it was anybody's division right up until the last couple of weeks. And the team that ended up at the bottom of the division is the team that I think is the popular pick by everybody to have the biggest bounce back. But so because of that, moving up from 4-12, I want to throw this to you, Brian. You had this weird year where Romo was out for most of it, and the team just couldn't pull anything together while he was gone. But, you know, even in a lot of those games, I mean, Matt Castle didn't play that bad. It was the defense that was letting down the team sometimes, too. I mean, how many wins can Romo's return really bring to this team, given everything else that's out there?
I'm hoping it's enough to win the division. Like you said, there were so many opportunities to win games when Romo was gone that we just needed one or two plays from our defense in the fourth quarter, and they just never made them. And it got to the point where you just were waiting for the letdown. But we get a supposedly healthy Tony Romo back, a supposedly healthy Dez Bryant back, and we're really going back to 2 years ago. We said in May, when we spent that number four overall pick on Zeke Elliott, that we're going to go back to what we did 2 years ago when we went 12-4 with DeMarco Murray, and that is we are going to pound the rock, we are going to control the clock, and we aren't going to let our defense get on the field. Because really, with the lack of changes to our defense, that's really the only way we succeed this season. We have to dominate the ball, you know, have a, you know, 3-2 time of possession advantage over teams. And that not only keeps our defense off the field, but it keeps Tony Romo upright. Because the last thing he needs to be doing is throwing 35, 40 times a game, because then he won't make it 16 games. He won't make it 12 games. So the blueprint is in place, and we've projected that to everyone. Everyone knows what we're going to do. It's just a matter of executing it and, you know, really getting back to that identity that we had when we went 12-4. And it's not out of the realm of possibility. We could do it again.
It would have to be an 8-win swing, which would be quite the improvement. And the other thing I find interesting about the Cowboys, though, is it would seem like you guys are now in about the most critical win mode win now mode than you could be, because you don't know how much longer you have Romo. Guys like Witten are getting old. There is a window for you guys to get, you know, yourself back to the Super Bowl, but it's not that wide. Were you surprised at how your team approached the second round, and what do you think about, you know, this sort of this opportunity that you have now and how long it's going to last?
Yeah, we've been talking about the Romo window for years, and while Jerry Jones may think it's 4 or 5 years, it's really down to a couple at best. Which, and you brought up that second round pick, Jalen Smith, fantastic player, and if he comes back healthy, could be one of the best in the league. But we're in a win now mode, and we're going to redshirt our second round pick, a, you know, top 35 player. I was dumbfounded by the move, to be honest. I really thought if that was the case, if we wanted to pick a linebacker who had injury questions and dropped, Miles Jack would have been the pick right there. But there's this weird dynamic of trying to balance winning now with a little bit of an eye towards the future, which it seems for so many years like they're all in on right now, especially with the contracts we have for our offensive line being manageable, because when we have to extend Zach Martin, Travis Frederick, we're going to have to break the bank to do that. You've got all these guys right now maximize that talent, and for them to have so many holes, especially on the defensive line, and choose a player who is not going to play in 2016 blew my mind and might have caused some damage around my house when that pick was made.
So. Yeah, Jerry will do that. What are you guys thinking here? I mean, in terms of the other guys in the division, the Cowboys ended up being a bit of a punching bag. But I doubt that any of you can feel that comfortable that they're going to stay the way that they were last year.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
they will bounce back. Again, Romo's health was the main contributor to their record last season. You can make the argument of case followed, you know, closely second by the play of their defense, because they were on the field so much due to the quarterback play when Romo was hurt. The only significant change to their defense is a certain player is not returning this year. I won't mention his name for obvious reasons. But I don't know if that helps or hurt them as far as anyone else stepping up, or if they can get production from that defensive end position the way they did, you know, when that player was there last year. Sean Lee is supposed to be healthy again this year. The secondary is supposed to be gelling again, but that doesn't mean anything if, you know, they can't control the ball, which is pretty much their best option. Their play over the last couple of years, even the year they won a division and lost a divisional round to Green Bay, their defense they weren't world beaters, but they played good enough to keep them in games. And as long as the offense maintained control, they were winning. So pretty much a two-headed, you know, case that they have here for winning the division, Romo's health and, you know, the play of their defense.
Yeah, I mean, that defense is going to be a sieve. It's when Brian said you can't let that defense on the field, I think literally, because it's going to be easy to score on these guys. I think that, you know, that plan of just running it and winning, grinding out games is probably going to work. I mean, this is a Cowboys team that has three offensive linemen that are probably the best at their position, so they do have a chance to be dominant, and that's not even including Lyle Collins, who has a chance to be, you know, an all-pro very soon. So, you know, as it's going to work against most teams, because, you know, unless you have a committed run defense to stop, the league has really moved away from that to smaller, faster guys to defend the pass. I think the Cowboys will be pretty successful on offense. Just if that defense needs to make one stop a game, but I know that that's even going to happen.
And one thing I'll throw out there, we're getting universally panned for not addressing the D-line earlier in the draft and going into the season. Our, you know, both of our starting defensive ends, DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory, are going to be suspended for 4 games. Now, I do think that DeMarcus suspension will come down at some point. But if we can get into that mode where we're running the ball, can get a lead, can control the clock, we're going to have more pass rushing opportunities than we had last year, which it's hard to really generate a lot of pass rush when teams are like, we don't have to step back and throw against y'all. We can just run it, control the clock ourselves. I think DeMarcus Lawrence, he had a good year last year. A lot of people are crediting that to the no longer present one who will not be named. But I think he is, you know, a very solid defensive end who will be able to establish some consistent pressure. We've got some guys, you know, I love Byron Jones. I think he's as dynamic and he fits this current NFL passing game, you know, tremendously. I mean, the way I was blown away with how he matched up with Gronk when they played New England. So there are pieces there, but if we have to rely on him, like y'all said, it'll be ugly. So it's going to be on the offense to really carry the day.
Well, so moving on to the team that finished in third place last year, it would be the team that I introduced first on this particular podcast. It is the New York Giants. I mean, one of the things that stands out, if you just look at the basic stats of the New York Giants, is that for a team that went 6-10, their net points, you know, the differential there was only -22, which means they lost a lot of games that were very close. I mean, it was one of those big storylines. Granted, I live in New York, so this is what I hear my coworkers and things like that complaining about constantly. It was just, there were a bunch of winnable games that got left on the field last year. You guys brought in some big guys. How confident are you, Sam, that this team can turn this around and actually dominate this division, or at least, you know, get out ahead?
You know, I'm actually feeling pretty confident about our chances this year. While we did have a couple of high-profile moves, which I don't agree with, I do like bringing back Jason Pierre-Paul on a one-year prove-it contract. You know, he has another year to deal with that hand. And then moving down that defensive line, which is the key to every Giants Super Bowl win, we got Damon Harrison, who is a run stopper, and the Giants haven't done that in years. So, you know, that'll be exciting. And then if Olivier Vernon plays up to 75% of what his contract is worth, then I think this is going to be, you know, a defensive line that could really control games, get pressure on the quarterback, and force those and let those cornerbacks, the big playmakers, and Dominique Rodgers, Cromartie, and Janoris Jenkins, to make plays on balls and maybe rack up those interceptions. And, you know, on offense, I don't think much more has to be said other than Odell Beckham Jr. You know, we talked about him earlier. He's just going to get better. Brian mentioned that teams are trying to scheme against him, and I don't think that's possible. I think he does too many things too well. He's going to get his yards. It's just a matter of what else the offense can do. I like the Sterling Shepard pick. I think he's going to be a great player for a long time, really sharp route runner. He's going to take away some pressure from Odell Beckham. A sneaky pick was that we picked Paul Perkins from UCLA, a running back who's great out of the backfield. And with McAdoo coaching, you know, he loves that quick passing game. And, you know, Perkins is just the sole benefactor of that. Rashad Jennings isn't really somebody who's going to make a ton of catches and make a bunch of people miss out of the backfield. So I think this offense is getting to more where McAdoo would like it. And I think we'll score. And I think we'll finish in first. I think this is a team that doesn't have a lot to do to win a couple more games and make the playoffs. So I'm actually pretty excited as a Giants fan this season.
It is. I mean, you guys definitely have some key strengths, and the Eli to Odell Beckham connection cannot be denied. And I also love the Sterling Shepard pick. But I mean, how confident are you in your offensive line? And, I mean, and who is going to be your starting running back? I mean, are you guys just going to be the New England Patriots and just ignore the running game and hope that there's enough time to get out the passes? I mean, how do you feel about that area of your offense?
That's a good question. You know, I think the biggest news coming out of the Giants is we're thinking about getting Eugene Monroe, who was just released. I think that'll help the offensive line if that goes through. But, you know, we can't plan for that. I think Weston Richburg is a good center. I think Pugh is a decent guard. I know Flowers can't get worse. So, you know, it really just has to be a tiny bit better than last. We scored last year. Scoring wasn't an issue. You know, a few games we weren't able to, but generally, you know, we were able to put up enough points to win. So this offensive line has to take a marginal step forward, and it'll help. But, you know, it's not going to be one of our strengths. There's no way can really look at this collection of guys and ever view it as a strength. But I don't think it's a big enough weakness to really hurt our chances.
Oh, well, to answer your question, the running backs, I think Jennings is going to be our, you know, first and second down back. I think Perkins is going to come in on third down. We still have Shane Vereen. I don't think you need, unless you have one of the top five running backs, I think a collection of running backs with different skills functions just fine. I think the Patriots showed us that. So I'm not really interested that we don't have a number one running back at this point.
Well, the Giants have been doing it by committee for a long time. But for the two teams that finished above them last year, I mean, this was very muddled, especially at the top, going heading late into the season last year. So Neil and James, how worried are you about the Giants and their ability to boost up into the top of this division?
Mainly because they're a division opponent, obviously I'm worried. But there are times when I'm actually happy we play the Giants, because playing against Eli Manning sometimes is like Christmas morning and Santa Claus is giving you presents. I mean, because I can always count on Eli for one pick six. He did it twice last year, one in each of the games, especially that abysmal Monday night game in which it seemed like no one wanted to win. But these are games that between Philly and New York can always go either way, no matter how well or bad either team is playing. They're always close. I don't think it's been a couple of years since either one of us blew out the other. They don't really worry me or make me nervous too badly unless they're, you know, on a run, 3, 4, 5 game stretch. But, you know, that hasn't happened with them in the last couple of years. And, you know, Eli has not been doing a good job lately of taking care of the ball, especially last season.
Yeah, I think James just nailed it. When you play the Giants, you have to watch very closely in the first quarter to see what sort of game Manning's going to have. Sometimes he can look like an all-pro or a world beater, and sometimes he looks like a panel beater. It's very difficult to know which Giants are going to turn up, and that's always a question with them. I guess my question for Sam would be, what are we going to see in terms of changes to the way the team plays, or there is performance on the field in terms of having a new coach and of course Coughlin leaving?
You know, hopefully what happens is the offense is getting away from running it every first down. I hope there's a little more variability in play calling now that Coughlin's gone. You know, you want to see, they have the receivers. They shouldn't really be running it much on first down. You know, wait for the short yardage situations to run. I like the models of throwing it when you're supposed to run. It seems like a good way to pick up yards in today's NFL. On defense, I think we're going to see mostly that defensive line being left alone to rush 4, and, you know, the linebackers and safeties are mostly not going to be really rushing. I think that's how they've had success in the past. You know, Darian Thompson, the safety that we got in the third round from Boise State, allows Landon Collins to play a little more up in the box where he's more comfortable. You know, there are definitely schematic changes that are going to happen to the Giants. It's just, you know, we're very thin. Any injuries is really going to hurt us. So, you know, it's the NFC East is the flip of a coin for every team. So hopefully it comes up the way we want it this season.
That's definitely true, and that transitions well into the next team we're going to talk about, which seems to have a lot of coin flips in front of it. A lot of question marks, a lot of teams that have, or a lot of players, rather, that have a lot of potential to shine or be busts or be disappointments. I mean, whether it is the quarterback position or the wide receiver position, there's just tons of questions on the Philadelphia Eagles. I personally, as a Chiefs fan, I'm pretty happy to see the turn of events where we got Andy Reid and we get to be the ones that are satisfied with it and send back his protege to basically be the "yeah, we know we screwed up" move in Philadelphia. But James, how do you feel about the Eagles and their chances of getting this division this year?
You know what? I'm kind of all over the place. One, I'm happy that the former coach is gone. That's been a long time coming. I understood the need for new hire after Andy Reid, and that was a good 1-year experiment. But year 2 was just an abysmal comedy of errors of every key player that carried this team the last 3 to 5 years gone in the span of two seasons. Washington, you're welcome, by the way. Buffalo not even re-signing, you know, Macklin last season. Like, why?
Thank you.
You know, I'm glad. Yeah, you're welcome also. I'm happy that, you know, the experiment is done and over with. Getting back to a familiar system, some of those players are still left over from when Andy Reid was coaching. There are only a handful of players left from the former genius from college. So this would be a nice mesh. Wide receiver and quarterback, yes, obviously the two biggest glaring holes in this team. I'm not even worried about quarterback. Quarterback will come along fine because Doug Peterson is a former quarterback who played in Philly, basically was offensive coordinator for Andy Reid in Kansas City the last several seasons. So he has a grasp on the West Coast offense. He's also hired Frank Reich, I believe, as his offensive coordinator, who also spent time in Kansas City as a quarterback's coach. So you have two quarterbacks in the meeting room with these three quarterbacks between Daniels, Sam Bradford, and Carson Wentz. And like I said, Sam Bradford's not going to be here long. Basically, his contract is a one-year thank you and year two go away. at that point, but whether it's Chase Daniel who steps up, or you know, whether Carson Wentz steps into the fold and is completely acclimated to the offense and, you know, terminology, because that's going to be the biggest thing with the West Coast offense is the terminology and everything else and getting things going. But actually, my biggest concern right now with this offense is running back primarily. I mean, obviously, you know, quarterback is the easy thing to say, and our wide receivers are not really proven because of the system that they ran the last 2 years. Basically, just hurry up, get to the line of scrimmage, run drag routes or go routes for the most part, get open, beat your man, and hopefully you score from 80 yards out. But now this methodical pace of the West Coast, where it's going to be mostly intermediate to short routes, we'll see more of the development of these wide receivers. And you know, hopefully Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles can be a 1-2 punch, but I'm really hoping that we find another running back in the offseason. Maybe someone gets cut who fits the West Coast style. I know there are a couple of aging veterans who have not yet been signed. Maybe one of them gets picked up. But as of right now, I'm not really settled with running back in our offense. It's a big concern for me. Defensively, I have no worries shifting back to the 4-3, almost everyone back to their natural positions. Michael Kendricks is a big playmaker at the outside linebacker spot, and I expect him to make another Pro Bowl, or at least be Pro Bowl worthy again this year. Secondary, ball hawks all over the place, especially with the addition of Leotis McKelvin from Buffalo. So we could finish basically anywhere between 2 and 4, but to say that we have a shot to win a division is probably stretching it, mainly because of the transition I expect to take place at quarterback. But as high as 2, maybe anywhere between 5 to 8 wins, I'm not going to really be upset with whatever season we have this year, like I said, because of the turnover of the personnel and the coaching staff and just the system itself. So it's going to take a year to get acclimated for everyone to get used to their new spots on the team.
Also, it seems like the offensive line needed a bit of work. I mean, there's a lot of positions where, if not, you know, the starters weren't necessarily the problem, but it seems like the depth was a little bit light. That was probably hurt by that giant trade to get Carson Wentz. How are you feeling about positions like, you know, your guard spot, and what do you think this offense is going to look like?
Well, if the previous coach didn't trade away or cut all of our guards for speaking their minds, I'd feel fine. But, you know, he wanted to run this up-tempo offense and got rid of two amazing guards. One ended up with a Super Bowl ring this past season, and one was blocking for Indianapolis Colts. So between Barber and Gardner, I honestly don't know what to expect from them in the West Coast offense. The only two people I have any pure confidence in going into the season as far as solidifying our offensive line are Peters and Kelsey. And you know, depth behind them, I'm okay with because of the fact that they both missed games last year, again, because of that pace. You know, these guys are basically taking 75 to 85, maybe 90 snaps a game if the offense is actually performing well. And, you know, offensive linemen, they can't stand up to all of that. You know, that's too much for them over the course of a season. But hopefully the offensive line gels and, you know, plays better than last year. They can only go up because there were far too many blown assignments or just defensive linemen running through untouched even in 3- and 4-man rushes last year because of the scheme of this offense and what it was the last two seasons. But since we're shifting to a traditional offense, West Coast style, I expect more consistency and better play because, like I said, it can't get any worse.
So what do you think, gentlemen? Are you sharing the Philadelphia Eagles superfans' pessimism that the ceiling for this team is 8-8?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I mean, you know what they say when you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. I think when you have three quarterbacks, you've set a huge black hole on your team, and I think in the end of the day, that's going to get them. I don't think they're going to get enough quarterback play to go much better than that in the best-case scenario.
Yeah, I wonder what the plan is at quarterback. Like, let's say Sam Bradford comes out of the gate and struggles. You know, are we going to Chase Daniel? How long until we're getting to Carson Wentz? Do we even see him at all this year? Or is this just a redshirt year for him? And, you know, you've got a solid receiver in Jordan Matthews, who I really like, but I was really disappointed by what I saw out of Nelson Agholor last year and just wondering, you know, who are going to be those dynamic playmakers? I'm still waiting for Zach Ertz to break out. I feel like I've been waiting for that for 3 years now. So there's potential here, which, you know, it's kind of dangling that carrot out in front. But like I said, this won't be the year that it's fully realized, and I don't think that's the plan. So I think 8-8 is very optimistic, and, you know, even as a ceiling. But this will be a rebuilding year for Philadelphia, and hopefully for their sake, a positive one, so they can get back in the mix next year.
I guess I'm waiting to see what the notoriously measured and very easygoing Philadelphia fans do when Sam Bradford throws his first interception, and how long the coaching staff can keep Carson Wentz on the bench. I think that's probably the big question, but I think James has pretty well nailed it there.
All right. Well, it's time to move to the kings of the division at 9-7.
Oh,
with,
God.
With the lowest net points differential of any division winner, of any playoff team last year. The Washington Redskins finished with positive 9 points on the season, which is kind of difficult when you win by, you know, if two more wins than you have losses, it only have 9 points more than you gave up. Anyways, Neil, you clearly are a you like that believer. You seem pretty confident in your ability to stay at the top of this division. Convince me of it.
Oh, well, I think just to go back to your opening there to the Washington's description here, it's lies, damn lies, and statistics, isn't it? Really, we were clearly, I think, at the end of the season, the best team in the division. And I think there were a lot of reasons around that. You know, obviously Dallas losing Romo was a huge bonus for Washington. And I think the Eagles fell away quite quickly in the last game we played them, which was a very surprising win for us. And the Giants were hot and cold all season, so that all kind of, it was a perfect storm, if you like, and we came out on top. Doesn't matter if you're 9-7. It doesn't matter if you're 14-2. You're the division champion. You're the division champion, and you can't help who you play. And yeah, all those cliches, you can roll them off. But I think looking ahead to this season, so much of it depends on Cousins. Yes, I'm a Cousins believer, But I'd also put a little pause there and say I also want to see him do it this year as well. I think the cast around him on offense is outstanding. I think we're almost done with our offense. Wide receivers are very strong. Garcon, Jackson, Jamison Crowder, who had a sneaky good rookie season playing the slot. And, of course, we've added the first-round pick in Josh Doctson. Not a player I would have selected, but the coaches seem to like him, so we'll see. If we can keep Jordan Reed healthy, he is one of the top tight ends in the league. Certainly, who's close to him? Kelce maybe is close to him, but no, not quite there. But he's probably the second best tight end in the league. I do have a concern, however, at running back. There's a weakness there for us, which we didn't really address. We addressed it in the seventh round of the draft, and maybe Keith Marshall will be a good player for us. But Matt Jones, he fumbled too much for me last year. He didn't stay healthy enough for me last year, and I've yet to be convinced by him. But let's give him a chance. He's got the size, he's got the speed. Let's hope he can do the job. I don't see us being a big running team. I think we'll pass the ball even more than we did last year because of the targets we have and because of the way they like to throw a short passing game. Offensive line, I love 4/5 of the offensive line. We have an issue at centre with Corey Lichtensteiger. Somehow he still has a job. I mean, I can't believe that that even I have been called up to play centre. I mean, he's terrible. Hopefully Spencer Long will take his place this year, but... yeah, if he's playing at centre, then Fletcher Cox will be licking his lips with the thought of playing Washington twice. On to looking at the defence, I think we've gone from a team who had no cornerbacks to a team literally overflowing with cornerbacks. We've got Josh Norman. We'll partner him up with Breland. They'll be our two starting corners. And we'll throw in Quinton Dunbar, Sean Phillips, and rookie Kendall Fuller to give us 5 really good solid corners, and I'm really happy there. Our pass rush has been the issue for us. I think, you know, Dallas are having trouble with their pass rush. We've also had trouble with the pass rush. We get sacks, but we probably don't get sacked at the right time when we really need them on those key third down plays. And we'll be hoping that this year Preston Smith, a rookie from last year, will take the next step. He looked terrific last year, especially towards the end of the season, and I look forward to seeing him develop. He could be a real find for us defensively. But overall, I think Washington have got a consistent squad together now. They spent most of last year together. They're developing slowly. Scott McLuhan's doing a great job building depth into the squad. I think we're probably... we don't have the best players, but we possibly have the best team.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that I think this season is going to be all about Cousins and who he is. We're going to find out who he is, and your team is going... your fate is going to be absolutely intertwined with him. I mean, as impressive as he was late in the season, and I just, looking at your schedule, for one, people tend to forget now because it's become just, this... I want to say myth. It's not a myth because it obviously happened, but it's become this epic moment. The whole "you like that moment" was Cousins celebrating a 1-point win over the Buccaneers. I mean, and then the 4-game win streak that you guys went on in order to get into the playoffs was over the Bears, the Bills, and then the Eagles and the Cowboys, which were like, in full implosion mode at that point. Cousins seems like an interesting guy. I mean, I would like to see him succeed just because I like, interesting characters to succeed. But I just feel like, despite all of that, he hasn't really proven that much yet.
Two points there, Nick. I would say, first of all, that win against Tampa Bay, the 1-point win, that was more about the fact that we were absolutely abysmal for most of that game, and we were well down, and it was the biggest comeback victory, I think, from a Washington team ever. And he orchestrated that and finished it off.
it was more about that than actually the fact that it was Tampa Bay who were only very good. And secondly, I would argue that it's very difficult to find a franchise in the NFL who isn't, which isn't reliant on the success of the quarterback. You know, it's very, I can't think of a team actually who if their star quarterback went down, would do anything other than struggle somewhat. So I think that's it's an easy thing to throw at Kirk Cousins, but I think Dallas will tell you, take the quarterback away and they're done. I mean, I think if you take Kirk Cousins away or he has a bad season, Washington's probably done as well.
All right, well, I'm going to throw it around the horn here. Let's handicap the Redskins' chance of maintaining their division championship. You, Brian, first.
Yeah, I think you nailed it on the head. There's a lot of parallels between the Cowboys and the Redskins, and it really does come down to that quarterback position, whereas we are, you know, worried about injury history, you're worried about performance with Kirk Cousins, because that offense has a ton of talent on it. You know, I don't want to say he has to just drive the bus, but, you know, he gets the ball into the hands of his playmakers. You know, that'll do the job right there. I've been really impressed with Washington, just the way they built this roster. For years, we were so used to them just throwing money at their problems and that just bottoming out every year. And to see the way they've drafted, see the way they've developed talent, the way they've grabbed guys in the later rounds, like a Bashaud Breeland, I've been really impressed with that. They're for real. I mean, last year wasn't a fluke. Will they win the division again? Of course, I'm not hoping they will, but I mean that they're going to be a competitor here for years to come, so long as Cousins or someone at that quarterback position does do the job. So they've definitely got a shot at it.
All right. Well, as the holder of the consolation prize, the number two quarterback in the division, Sam, what do you think about Cousins and the Redskins' chance of repeating here?
You know, I think the biggest sign that they're not repeating is that they won last year. You know, that's a pretty sure sign that you're not going to win the division the next year in the NFC East. That being said, I don't know. I think they're just going to be pretty much the same team. I just think that I think the Giants got a little better. I think the Cowboys will stay healthy. So that's like mostly why I don't think they're going to repeat. But, you know, anybody but the Eagles this season really has a chance to win.
All right. And lastly, before we get to your rankings and predictions for the standings this year, James, what do you think about the Redskins?
First question I have is, when is Kirk Cousins going to sign a contract?
He signed his franchise tag. He signed a franchise tag before the ink was dry on it. In terms of a long-term deal, it's getting closer to the point where you start to think, no, it's not going to be done before middle of July. So I would probably err on the side of saying nothing is going to get done until the end of the season, the end of this upcoming season.
Okay. That was like the precursor to what I was going to say, because I didn't know if he had signed it yet or not. So much has been going around since Fletcher Cox signed his deal, and they were, you know, I've seen reports about who still hasn't signed their tenders or tags yet, most namely Von Miller, but I didn't know if Kirk had signed his either. That being said, I don't expect Washington to win a division again this year. It's new for them. This is a team that pretty much has gone over, almost 10 years between playoff runs. So, I mean, it's completely new roster. I mean, you have some veterans who had been to the playoffs before, but with other teams, mostly young at some key positions. Matt Jones and Kirk Cousins pretty much being the anchors of your offense. They can be held in check more times than not. And Kirk Cousins, I don't think, has done enough to prove to me that he is one of those guys who, you know, will his team to victory or pull them out of a tight spot on a consistent basis or even play consistently. I honestly believe that the previous quarterback was run out of town on purpose by the head coach just so he can start Kirk Cousins, and was just pleasantly surprised that he played well. But I don't expect Washington to be up at the top, maybe compete for the division for a little bit early on in the season, but somewhere towards the middle. I'd have to double check their schedule. I don't see the consistency taking fold to where they can be one of those teams that consistently gets to the playoffs year after year after year.
All right, well, we'll keep it with you, James. What is your prediction for how this division is going to shape up? First, second, third, fourth?
Oh, gosh. In a pipe dream, I'd say Dallas, Philly, New York, Washington. I'm giving my team just a little bit too much credit because of all the turnover and the coaching changes. Realistically, it will most likely be, and as much as I despise the Cowboys, I honestly think that everyone being healthy, it's their division to win. If not them, then the Giants. So there's your 1-2 right there, provided Romo stays healthy and they get back to form like it did 2 years ago when DeMarco Murray was one of the league leaders in running, rushing the football. With a new system in place for the Giants, they may finish second or they could finish last depending on how Eli plays and takes care of the ball. My Eagles, realistically, with what's going on at quarterback, still a couple of wins here and there, maybe a few weeks of consistent play from everybody, the defense really carrying us. Best case scenario, I'd probably say would be third place, and Washington probably bringing up the rear, if not third. So I'm looking at New York, Dallas fighting for 1-2, Washington, Philly fighting for 3-4.
All right. Well, he's called out Dallas as being the potential winner, jumping from last to first. So I got to go to Dallas. Brian, do you think that's possible? And what is your 1-4?
I not only think it's possible, I think it is the odds-on favorite for what's going to happen in the NFC East. I think Dallas can get back to, and I don't think they're getting back to 12-4. I think that's a little bit of a pipe dream as well. But I can see them winning double digits this year. I can see them being a 10-6 team. Again, we've said it throughout the show. It's all going to hinge on the right arm of Tony Romo and potentially a collarbone as well. But I think it's going to be a tight race with Dallas, New York, and Washington. I've actually got Washington second. I think they are what they are. They're a 9-7 team. I just don't think that's going to win the division this year. I think the Giants will slot right behind them at 8-8. I just, when you have so many new faces coming in, you know, trying to get that chemistry, especially on the defensive side, I can't buy into it before I see how it looks on the field. So I see them as an 8-8 team, and I think we're all universally kind of agree that Philly is, you know, the least competent of the four. Like I said, it's a rebuilding year for them, and I'm interested to see what they come up with. I agree their defense will net them a few wins. It might surprise a few folks, but at the end of the day, I can't see more than really 5 wins out of Philly, so they will have wrapped up 4th place quite early this year.
All right. Well, Dallas isn't really buying the Giants either. So, Sam, what's your 1-4?
Number one, I'm going Giants, I think. We win the division. I think the Redskins come in right behind us. I think, you know, they're still a solid team. They won the division last year. Not many changes to that roster. I think the Cowboys finish 3rd. You know, even if they stay healthy, I don't think they have the pieces on defense to really carry them. Ezekiel Elliott. First, you know, he's still a rookie running back, as good as he is, as good as that offensive line is. I don't think he's going to be as dominant as people are expecting, or even putting up the numbers that people are expecting. And I think last place is clearly the Eagles. It's a rebuilding year for a team without many draft picks, so we'll see where they end up. But I think that's my prediction. I also think Odell Beckham wins Offensive Player of the Year, so there's also that.
All right, so Neil, it's back to you, the former winner. I am guessing you're going to pick the Redskins to top it all again.
No, I'm not. I'm going to say, I think I agree with the guys. I think Philadelphia will be the cellar dweller around there, 4, 5, 6 wins, 6 wins max.
with Dallas, Washington, and the Giants, for me, it's still really early. I can see a 9-7 record winning this division. I can see Dallas being an 8-8 sort of team. I think there are more problems. I think when your quarterback goes down and you slump, was it 4-12? I think that probably indicates that there are more problems than just the quarterback. So I think they probably have a slightly weaker roster than Washington and the Giants. So I put them at 8-8 in third place. And I think it's going to be a shootout between the Giants and the Redskins, both at 9-7. And I don't know. It could go either way. It wouldn't surprise me if we take it again. And I think the NFC East has a pretty rough looking schedule with the AFC and NFC North teams to face. I'll just say Redskins and Giants at 9-7, and yeah, division record will come out on top. I'm not going to give you a number one, but I'll put those two teams both with the same record.
Lovely cop out.
Thank you.
All right, and we are now joined by our Houston Texans superfan, who has been doing a special little segment for every single one of these divisions that we've been going through, in that, in case you just weren't quite really riveted by our very wonky and fan-centric breakdown of all the things, we're going to get you with popular culture, and that is... if for anyone else in the car riding along with the football fan here that's listening to this, if you watch Game of Thrones, now is the time to listen in, because we're going to be comparing all the teams in each of this, well, in each and every division coming up, but now we're working at the NFC East and looking at what Game of Thrones character does this each and every team fit with. So, James, take it away. I give it to you to tell us who we should be rooting for and rooting against in this division in the world of Game of Thrones.
All right. Well, I know I've given the disclaimer quite a few times before, but just to reiterate one more time, there are a lot of right answers to these particular things, so we won't really get into the nitty-gritty of is one just a slightly better fit than another. There are, however, definitely wrong answers. Like my classic example is Robb Stark will never, ever be Cleveland. So with that said, we're going to go in alphabetical order, and up first with Dallas, a character that I'm sure a lot of people have been expecting and just waiting for the shoe to drop. I have Joffrey Baratheon representing Dallas. I mean, good Lord, are both of them loud and obnoxious. They take credit for things that others have done before them. Jerry Jones, rather, taking credit for what Jimmy Johnson has done, and Joffrey taking credit for the defense of King's Landing, which is really Tyrion's work. And, you know, both of them employ very questionable individuals to carry out their will. You know, Jerry Jones employed Greg Hardy and Joffrey Baratheon, and now, you know, Cersei employed the Mountain and the Hound. So, you guys, you think that fits?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Cowboys are constantly called America's team. And there was a time when, you know... when all of Westeros was united under Joffrey Baratheon, and everyone was all pretty excited at this little blonde young king that they had and thought he was pretty cool for fighting the war. Just like everyone thought that Joffrey Baratheon was Westeros' king, and only for a little bit of time, everyone has been under the impression that Dallas has been America's team. But that's basically people that, you know, were thinking about that short time in the early 90s, and I, living also in the Midwest, am annoyed as hell with it, and I'm done with it.
Excellent. Well, that brings us along to the New York Giants, and this one here is probably going to aggravate quite a few people. For the Giants, I picked Hodor. Hodor in the series has one job, and that is to hold the door closed. The Giants have one job in the NFL, and that is to prevent the Patriots from either winning a Super Bowl or having an undefeated season. There's nothing against having that one job. They do it admirably. They do it very well. And, you know, the entire realm or the entire NFL has them to thank for that. And honestly, if you watch Eli Manning play quarterback, doesn't he look like he's being worked into by someone else at times? Just that nice blank expression.
I think he had the same expression when his brother won the Super Bowl.
That was probably an out-of-body experience for him as well, yes.
Eyes rolled back in the back of his head. It was all just Brand pulling the strings.
All right. Well, that brings us to Philadelphia. And we touched on Reek earlier, and at that time I kind of said how Reek is delineated from Theon Greyjoy, and that's because Philadelphia is Theon Greyjoy. They like to strut around, especially if you remember him at the beginning of the pre-Reek days. He likes to strut around like he's won something, yet he's really just a hostage of his own division or his allies, I suppose. And he completely seems to bungle every advantageous situation he has. If the rest of the division is busy beating up on each other, he can't take a simple castle and hold it. Since his return from being Reek, now he just kind of defers to whoever really in power. He doesn't really have an identity. He's broken, lacks any clear semblance of or plan for himself, and appears conflicted in his own leadership and motivations.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, the conflicted part definitely fits.
All right, and last but not least is Neil's Washington Redskins. And for them, I picked Jaime Lannister. He had a long history of noble service, but always something behind the scenes that prevented everyone from rallying behind him or really, truly liking him. He's had some dark years these past couple seasons, and he's regaining a little bit of his confidence. And but with the whole Dan Snyder thing, will they ever really be regarded in the same light that they were, way back in the day?
Well, I also like that, Jaime Lannister, no matter what he does, is still carrying around a name that carries infamy with it as the Kingslayer, the man who was supposed to protect the king, stab the king in the back, and therefore he has this name of shame that carries around with him, just like the racist name of the Washington franchise.
Oh, dear. I have no idea about this, but... isn't there somebody
That's
better,
hilarious.
Somebody nicer who was maybe successful in the past and is rebuilding to become successful in the future? Somebody good?
Well, I mean...
Or are there no good characters in this show?
There's really no good, truly good characters. But, I mean, Jamie was very successful in the past, and he's kind of gaining a little bit of that back right now. You just have to kind of be morally ambiguous.
Honestly, I think if there was any Game of Thrones character that was likely to strut through a press conference yelling, "You like that?" it would be Jaime Lannister.
Sounds like you nailed it, James.
Excellent. Well, thanks, guys. I hope everybody's enjoying the division previews. If you have any comments or complaints, you can hit me up directly on Twitter at Boiler_James.
The NFC East, or as I like to call it, the NFC Least. And let me just couch that for a moment, because it's not necessarily the worst division in football. It's just all of these teams are almost exactly the same to me. I don't see the worst team in the NFL in this division, but I also don't see any world beaters in this division either. They're all just sort of the same. If there was a definition of mediocre for the NFL, a picture of the NFC East would be in the dictionary. So, let's start with the Cowboys. They finished last season at 4-12, a lot of that due to the injury to Tony Romo. But can you really put all of the blame on the quarterback? I don't necessarily think so. Where do I see them finishing this season? I think a 9-7 record for the Cowboys is attainable and is perfectly reasonable. Will that be enough to win the division? Stay tuned to find out. The Giants last season finished 6-10. Again, a lot of their problems had to do with some injuries. Tom Coughlin loses his job. But did they really change the culture with the Giants? Ben McAdoo was the offensive coordinator. He gets promoted. I don't necessarily think there was a culture change, and thus, I don't necessarily know if there was enough change to get the Giants to move forward in a positive momentum. That said, I do think they're going to finish a little better than 6-10. I see them also at 9-7. The Eagles last season finished 7-9. There was a major culture change here with the Philadelphia Eagles. However, I think it's going to take some time for that to take part. I think Doug Peterson's plan, he's got an issue at the quarterback position. That's going to be difficult to manage through the season. And I also think there's just going to be a little bit of a transition period here before everything that Doug Peterson wants to implement ends up happening with the Philadelphia Eagles. I see them taking a step back. I see them finishing last in this particular division at 4-12. The Redskins, a lot of positive momentum. Kirk Cousins, you like that? You like that? Well, we did like that, and you ended up finishing 9-7, first place in the division. Be careful what you wish for, because with the first place finish in the mediocre division, you now have a first place schedule set up to face. And that is not going to help you very much when you're trying to make it into the playoffs and try to beat those other teams that will have a second place schedule to face off against, a third place schedule to face off. So when you're looking at all of these teams being equal, you look at things that are going to separate them, and I think ultimately it's going to come down to schedule, and thus I see the Redskins taking a slight step backwards, finishing 7-9. So, the Giants and Cowboys both finish at 9-7. However, I think the Giants, based on my win-loss predictions, remember, I go through every single game and pick a winner and a loser. It's foolish and foolhardy. I totally admit that. But based on my predictions for each and every game of the NFL season, I see the Giants finishing with a better division record than the Cowboys and thus getting the only playoff spot out of this division. Will that happen? Probably not, but it's always fun to share these thoughts. What are your thoughts? Share them with us, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can check us out on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Don't miss any of our division previews. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a review there if you would. That'd be fantastic. You can also catch this podcast on Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, AHA Radio. And of course, our archive is always available, blogtalkradio.com/NextFanUp. I will be back with another division preview. In the meantime, I leave you with the immortal words of Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.